AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Friday. Good to be with you today, Matt and Brett today. Brett, you guys did the show yesterday, right?
We did, yes.
What was the diagnosis on this swarm of bugs that we have going on here, man?
So they're due to the flooding we're getting by the rivers, obviously, and they should be gone in like 2 weeks is kind of what the word was.
I go out to walk my dog in the morning, and if I do not have a baseball cap on, I have to, I mean, I literally will have to, you know, comb the bugs out of my hair. Mm-hmm. That's why, actually, if you're watching us on the show right now, I shaved all my hair off. Why? I was tired of the bugs. Or if it's raining out and you put an umbrella out, you basically created a safe zone for about 5,000 bugs. And so they're all on you. Ugh!
Yeah, it's just because of the flooding, they couldn't go out and treat them earlier. So that's why they're just horrific right now.
It's, oh man, it's enjoy Pride Month here in Minneapolis, St. Paul. A lot of stuff going on over the next month, but make sure, I mean, the cologne du jour, deep woods off. I'm going to make that suggestion. The deep woods off stuff works. Mm-hmm. And by the way, if you do get the bug bite, have you ever tried the afterbite?
Which one?
It's called afterbite. It works like a charm. So there you go. How do you get through this cycle? Deep woods off. It is a great cologne. You know, trust me, your special loved one will find it attractive. And afterbite.
You know what didn't help you?
What?
Dark colors are supposed to be what attracts those things.
Seriously?
Yep.
I mean, man.
And you're in a black shirt, so.
I dress like a goth kid, for God's sakes. In shorts. It's a 50-year-old man. All right, I've got other issues to deal with. Joining us to begin off the show today, though, oh, I'm so glad to have her back, Susan Dew with City Pages. She is here to talk about a great story she has out there. Hi, Susan.
Hey, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I mean, by the way, I should mention, I've been enjoying your photos, my friend. You have so much fun. You go out and do a ton of fun things.
Oh, yeah. I'm sort of glad I don't do it as a job, the photography part, because, you know. I get to have something for myself.
It's so much more enjoyable when you do something for your own personal, you know, hobby, pleasure, enjoyment versus having to do it for work, because I know a lot of people who like take great photographs and I was like, well, this is great. It's like, I hated taking that. And you're like, it's beautiful though. I don't care for it. You know, if you do it as a hobby, it's so much more enjoyable. And you take wonderful photos.
Oh, thank you so much. I like your flower photos recently too. I've been trying to do the same thing. They actually inspired me a little bit to try and go into macro a little bit.
Well, if that's the case, you've actually excelled me, because your photos, your flower photos looked great. By the way, find Susan on social media. You'll see what I'm talking about there. I got to ask you about the story. Now, we have in Minnesota, we have prevailing wage laws, which basically say that if there's a state job in an area, the prevailing wage in the area is what gets paid, correct?
Right. So the prevailing wages are basically the minimum wage that an employer has to pay workers who are working on any government-funded project. So if you get public dollars, you have to abide by certain wage standards and labor laws.
And it should be mentioned, the reason why these standards exist is that there was a lot of times where companies would ship in workers from out state and save. I mean, you know, we're talking about, you know, skilled laborers. And so we're talking, you know, sometimes $10, $15 an hour would be, cut off the cost because they would be importing workers. And the reality is that this is a way to prevent the local, not only is it encouraging local businesses to get contracts, but it is also encouraging the local community to get the prevailing wage there, so that people are not being undercut.
Yeah, absolutely. It's to prevent a lot of unsavory practices in the construction industry. If you're someone who pays attention to this sort of thing, over the past couple of decades, construction companies have become increasingly fissured, meaning you'll have a general contractor who's responsible for the construction of a project, but then they'll hire subcontractors who might have more subcontractors of their own. So it's not like one company has all these people on their books. It's like the work is being split in a very top-down ladder structure. And at every step of this ladder, the company has to take a cut. So when you get to the very bottom, often, you know, the unions say you see a lot of labor trafficking and labor brokers who actually go to other countries and bring people over who may not know their rights, who may not know the language, don't know how to advocate for themselves. And those people are very easily taken advantage of. So, you know, the unions care about it a lot because, well, first of all, these workers are being exploited. And it also creates this very unfair, un-American, uncapitalistic competition that allows these bottom feeders to proliferate in the industry overall.
Reading from your article, DigiKey, an electronic supply company that employs about 4,000 people in the small northern Minnesota town of Thief River Falls, is in the process of building a $300 million distribution facility. About $4 million of that comes from state subsidies. So, once again, with those state subsidies come the prevailing wage laws.
And actually, it's if I may correct you, it's $4 million from the Department of Unemployment and Economic Development, and that's just a grant, but the project overall gets, I think, $44 million in tax subsidies.
Okay, so that's so
even
it,
more.
Okay, so it, but it falls within the parameters of the state saying, you know, prevailing wage laws have to be input in here, correct?
Absolutely, yep.
When did you, where, how did you find, get wind that there's something might be kind of, something iffy might be going on here?
Yeah, so actually the local building trades and unions and labor law watchdogs have been keeping an eye on this project because DigiKey, this electronic supply company in northern Minnesota, is a huge employer. They do a lot of good for the community. And when they started talking about this expansion project, everybody was watching it because it was receiving so much public subsidy. So, you know, the unions knew from the beginning that they wanted to oversee, you know, whether payroll was being done correctly, and they can request, you know, payroll records from the general contractor, and the general contractor provided them. And they would look through these records and see if it, if the details reflected what is customary in the type of work that goes into these types of projects, because they have a lot of experience with, you know, what a big concrete pour looks like, and whether they're, you know, it's likely that somebody would be doing as much iron work as the payrolls would suggest. And so they started talking to the workers who worked for lower tiers in that subcontracting ladder and found that they weren't really being paid the type of wages that corresponded to the correct type of work that they were doing. And it took a year and a half of work to make it public. Like, these sorts of stories and rumors are very common in the construction industry, but it does take a wealth of evidence and sworn testimony from witnesses and workers to be able to come to this point where they're making a very informed complaint and delivering that to the Department of Labor and Industry, where and making it public and putting pressure on the employer who's benefiting from the construction project, like DigiKey, in hopes that that would change things. So this, you know, came about based on much work over a long period of time.
Well, and I want to point this out because this is not small potatoes. You mentioned Millennium Concrete here, and by the way, the thing that I find to be so just evil and nefarious about this is that it's easy for a company to say, oops, we just hit the wrong, you know, control alt key in the description, and oh, these people accidentally got paid this. So it's almost as if there's a way built in excuse for them if they do get caught on this. And it sounds like this sort of thing might be going on such a large scale that it doesn't get caught a lot. In Pennington County, the cement masons are paid $44 an hour, which, you know, once again, skilled labor. Iron workers, even though they get, as you mentioned, they get paid more in the metro area, they're only paid $24.81. That's basically a $20 difference here. And Millennium Concrete pocketed over 5 months $300,000 that was supposed to get paid to their workers because they basically mislabeled the workers as iron workers, not as cement masons.
Right. Yep. And these are allegations, of course, at this point, from the Fair Contracting Foundation of Minnesota. And, they certainly think that this is very obvious. I think it's very just by looking at the payroll, and I think their estimates are conservative. But, you know, the company Millennium Concrete right now does deny the allegations, and they claim that they can prove it, and they deserve the chance to show that they did everything by the books, if in fact they did. Although, you know, I did look them up to just see if they were registered to do business in Minnesota, and they don't have a registration
with
the Secretary of State, and they don't have – and construction companies, as you know, also require a contractor license, and they don't have that with the Department of Labor and Industry either. So they haven't since 2015, at least.
Well, and if there's one thing I could just clarify here, and just if you might be able to explain this, I don't know if you can. So if you do have a construction site, you know, you would think that if I'm hiring someone to do concrete that they may be paid for concrete. But if that person basically has them lift some steel or iron and move it from one place to the other just to get it out of the way, I mean, how are the rules on the clarification, the qualifications for what an individual does? Because you talked about how some of the Spanish-speaking people, we'll talk about people getting taken advantage of. They were basically getting paid the lower wage even though they were doing the concrete mason work. How does the qualification for the state work? I mean, I'm presuming that if you're hired to come on the site as a concrete mason, that regardless of what else they have you do, you're a concrete mason.
Yeah, that would be a pretty ideal expectation. But a lot of work on construction sites across the state is it's very hectic, and there are some job sites and not. All job sites are made the same, and some job sites require that all the workers be union, and there's a very clear division of labor as far as, you know, this crew of people are here to pour the concrete. This crew of people is here to finish it. This crew of people is laying rebar and reinforcing, and this crew of people is doing carpentry and so on and so forth. But with you know, other certain job sites where that division of labor is not a priority, and practices surrounding logging individual hours that workers work and exactly what job they were doing from 1 hour to the next, which is the prerogative of the employer. If those practices aren't taken as seriously, then it can become very ambiguous as to what someone was doing throughout the day. So, in you know, it's not as if workers sign off on these logs themselves and have to endorse, you know, what the company reports that they did. So it can get very messy when you don't work for a reputable employer in the first place. So that's where, you know, it gets kind of hinky, and reputation does make a big difference. And that's why some property owners and project managers do require that that workers all be union, because then they don't have to worry about that sort of thing.
And Millennium Concrete had several consecutive work weeks where 60% and even 80% of the hours were attributed to iron work. As you point out, this is a concrete company, and apparently they're only doing iron work. That there something is seems to be wrong there. The top contractor here that's hiring these subcontractors, what has been the response that you've received from them once this is getting pointed out?
So I did receive a statement after my story originally ran, but I included it in a update to the story. McShane Construction is the general contractor on the site, so they are responsible for the subcontractors that work under them, and they said that they weren't made aware of the allegations until recently, and that they are investigating. They aren't saying one way or the other, but they do support Millennium Concrete and are working with them to prove that they're paying prevailing wages correctly. So I guess we'll hear what comes out of that investigation.
It's one other thing that also I'm interested in is considering that they don't have a construction license under the Department of Labor and Industry. They're not registered to do business under the Secretary of State's office. If the Secretary of State can the Secretary of State hold them accountable, or is it one of those things where they have to go to the top contractor and hold them accountable for hiring someone out of state? Because, you know, they can say you're going to pay this, but the reality is if they're not – you know, if they're not doing regular business in the state of Minnesota, they can just say, well, I'm not going to do it and I'm going to move away. Can the Secretary of State hold the parent contractor accountable for the subcontractor's failures?
That's a really good question. And I don't know the answer to that, but I'm not very hopeful that the general contractor can necessarily be held responsible for violations by subcontractors, because that is one of the incentives for having a fissured contracting structure. So, yeah, that's one way to get around having to take responsibility.
It reminds me, that was John Oliver had a great thing. This is a different industry, but it was the fracking industry over in the Dakotas, how basically, you know, people were getting killed on the sites, and because it's subcontractor after subcontractor, subcontractor, the actual owner of the land had no culpability, and the subcontractor basically just disappeared overnight, and so there was no accountability for the families of these people that got killed because of bad practices on the oil field. Sounds, you know, obviously completely different industry, but it's, yeah, the fact that we don't have any teeth here, I think, in the state law to go after a company like that, and just once again, we have to research that a little bit more to find out what exactly the Secretary of State Steve Simon could do and bring charges here, or maybe the Attorney General of the state could bring charges. But needless to say, these are the local workers. And so I always kind of shrug my shoulders, because generally these are conservative business owners who basically talk about, you know, helping out the working man. They depend on this, and then when it comes down to it, they themselves try to their hardest to prevent the people who are doing the hard work for them from getting paid correctly.
Right. I don't want to speculate as to what's in the hearts and minds of people I don't know, but I do know that Keith Ellison in the AG's office is aware of these issues surrounding workplace practices that, as you pointed out, apply to various industries. And there will be more stories to come out of that. I'm working on something currently. So, I'm hopeful of that. Keith might make some change.
Oh, that's called foreshadowing. Okay, we'll have you back when you get that next story, when it gets done and gets published. We'll make sure we have you back and get an update on this, okay?
Cool. Thanks, Matt.
My pleasure. Susan, by the way, I'm going to take you out to – let's grab lunch in July on me, okay? My treat.
I love lunch. Thank you.
Beautiful. I'll send you a note. Susan Dew from City Pages. I will post the story later on after the show is over. It's a great story, and it is a question here. This is about just basically making sure people are getting paid what they're owed, and, you know, once again, they're fighting against the working man on this case. Susan, great story. Thank you very much for the time.
All right. Thank you, Matt.
Take care. We'll take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Tom Hartman here for All Energy Solar. One of the myths about solar is that you save more if you wait, but waiting to switch can actually cost you more. While tax rebates make solar affordable, those rebates are often limited and decrease over time. So when you wait, you risk losing some of the incentives that make solar so easy to afford today. And besides, the sooner you get your all-energy solar system, the sooner you reduce or even eliminate that high electricity bill. Make the switch today at allenergysolar.com.
With all the convenient big box stores that sell appliances, why do so many Minnesotans choose Warner Stellion? Check online to learn that Warner Stellion is a Minnesota family-owned business for over 60 years. Warner Stellion sells million.
Hi, this is Ken Hagland, host of Living Healthy and Aging Well, inviting you to listen to our new show airing on Saturdays from noon to 1, where we talk about your health and your life and provide insights to living and aging well. Each week, we provide answers to important questions regarding health care, elder care, end-of-life care, and caregiver support to help you and your loved ones plan for the future and enjoy your highest quality of life today. Please join us every Saturday from noon to 1 for Living Healthy and Aging Well.
Hi, I'm Peter Solak.
And I'm Adam Ostrowski.
We are here at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces to talk about the joy of live fire cooking. Cooking over a live fire is the oldest and most basic form of cooking.
What's new is in the way a fire is handled and its heat is managed.
It's easier to experience and enjoy the smell and taste of food cooked over a live fire.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces sells and installs live fire grills, fire pits, and ovens. Let us help you experience the smell, the taste, the fun of cooking with fire.
Pizza was first made and is still best made in an open fire oven. The radiant and conductive heat of a live fire is unmatched for wood roasting and baking artisan breads, too.
Come see the many ways you can cook over a live fire.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces has over 35 working wood and gas units on display at the corner of East Franklin and Riverside Avenue in Minneapolis. More information at woodlandstoves.com. Find the fire that works for you. Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, out of the ordinary products and services since 1977.
Nice to have Susan do that. City Pages, between her and Mullen, they've been absolutely hitting it out of the park over there. They've had some really good stories over in City Pages lately. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. And I also want to – yesterday's show, we talked about that mining story about whether they could pollute the rivers more. And I mentioned the Timberjay news sources up on the range. If you're not reading Timberjay, Timberjay is a great newspaper, and it's a great local newspaper, and it basically thumbs the nose at this idea in rural Minnesota that this newspaper has to be the most far-right conservative, you know, entity that you've ever seen to basically make any money. I mean, the Timberjay is just a solid news outlet. They generally they report on environmental issues, local issues as well. And they are not unapologetically far rightos. They basically do a pretty good product, and the result is they're a relatively popular paper. So I recommend go read City Pages. If you're not reading City Pages every day, read City Pages every day, and then of course Timberjay as well if you get the chance to do that. The sentence is in here. Former Minneapolis police officer Mohammed Noor will spend 12 and a half years in prison for the shooting death of Justine DeMond. Friday morning, judge brought down the sentence for Noor's charges of third-degree murder and manslaughter connection to the July 20, 2017 death. Once again, okay, we finally have held a police officer accountable for an unjustifiable shooting, and the question will remain, is the only reason this guy was held accountable is because he was Somali-American? Well, you know, I'm glad we're getting justice, but I think we're also, you know, peeling back the scab a little bit here on that. I will say there still is a very legitimate chance this guy might not ever serve a day in jail because, as we talked about last week, there's a story out of Eden Prairie where the guy who basically – the police officer who lied on search warrants, he lied on the justification for the search warrants. So the search warrants became, you know, irrelevant. They could not use them, and it ended up allowing a guy who had murdered someone, had killed someone, off the hook because the case was tainted by this one police officer, and that they could not charge this police officer for, you know, fabricating a search warrant because the state law says that unless the police officer there's corroborating evidence beyond the police officer's own admission that he did it. So the officer says, yeah, I did it. Well, that's not good enough. We need more evidence that they let the guy go. In this day and age, once again, we have a state where conservatives, in an effort to basically say, no, I love cops more, have written laws which allow police officers to get away with murder and be very rarely held accountable. And frankly, once again, the way I read the law in the state of Minnesota, you can be a police officer, you could be off duty, you could be drunk as a skunk in a bar, you could tell the people in the bar, I'm going to go get my gun and shoot you. Go home drunk, come back with a gun, shoot the guy in the bar, and all you have to do as an officer is just saying, I was scared! And you basically can get away with it. And, I mean, if the argument's going to be if the standard we have had in this state is, I am scared, is enough. Well, I'm not sure if Mohammed Noor is going to actually serve any time. And I know that there is a lot of pressure from the Australian government, and as rightfully, there should have been a lot of pressure from the state government. But the reality is that just seems to be that people are – I think the judicial system is so jaded on these cases because the reality is that they already know that the laws have been written to a point where, you know, it's legal to commit murder if you're an officer. It is. And there's not much you can do to hold people accountable. 952-946-6205. Todd Collett is a fantastic fella. He is a guy, a local listener. He was a big listener for many, many years here in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Moved to Spain, lucky dog. And he lives out there right now enjoying Ibiza. I imagine it's just it's just like Minnesota, only no bugs. I imagine just the exact same thing. Anyway, he's out there, and he has his band Just Folk. They have their fourth album, Grounded, is out. And I'm mentioning this because Todd sponsors AM 950. He can't visit the station sponsors, but he can sponsor the station, which he does. If you would like to sponsor the station, 952-946-8885. 952-946-8885 is the phone number. You can find out more information about that. With Grounded coming out from Just Folk, once again, their fourth album, we have copies of it right now to give away. I got a copy of the CD to give away, and we're going to be giving away CDs all next week as well. But your chance to win right now, 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Caller number three, Brett. Caller number three. We'll let them take home the Just Folk Grounded CD. Good luck there. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Eat fresh and support local farmers this summer by shopping at the Minneapolis Farmers Market. The market has the best selection of fresh and local fruits and vegetables, meats, and farmstead goods. It's not too late to pick up plants and flowers. Also, fresh at the market is asparagus, rhubarb, and green onions. The Minneapolis Farmers Market is open every day, 6 a.m. to 1 p.m. Plus, there's additional locations Tuesdays at the Hennepin County Government Center and Thursdays at Nicollet Mall. More details at mplsfarmersmarket.com.
This is Ellie Krug from Ellie 2.0 Radio on Mondays from 7 to 8 a.m. Many listeners know that I founded Human Inspiration Works, LLC, which trains on human inclusivity and on how to be welcoming to diverse humans. Today, organizations of all sizes find that they need to train team members on diversity and inclusion. I can do that. Many say that my trainings change the way they see the world. I'd love to help make your organization more welcoming. For more information, go to humaninspirationworks.com. Thank you.
There's no question you need omega-3s. But which form should you take? Fish oil or krill oil? Scientists have debated this for years. Luckily, there's a new solution to satisfy everyone. It's called Krill Omega 50 Plus. It combines ultra-pure fish oil and joint-soothing krill oil together in just one tiny pill. It's so powerful, it can promote the health of your heart and your arteries. And if that wasn't enough, it can also boost your joint comfort in just days. We're so sure Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you. We'll even send you a free bottle to put to the test. The debate is over. It's not fish oil or krill oil. It's both. And now it's free. Just pay $4.95 for shipping and claim your free bottle. Call now. 1-800-647-1579. 1-800-647-1579. That's 1-800-647-1579.
Congratulations, Gloria and Edina. Congratulations, Gloria. You got yourself a copy of Just Folk's album, Grounded. Like I said, we're giving away these CDs next week as well, so listen for your chance to win there. And thank you, Todd, for sponsoring AM 950. We sure do appreciate that. Programming here brought to you by EatLocalMinnesota.com. Restaurant of the week there is Burger Moe's. Fantastic variety there. No matter what you kind of like on your burger, whether you like, you know, a little spicy, you like a traditional California burger, you like the onions on there, a little barbecue action, they've got a burger for you. It is a great place to stop on by. 20 fresh, never frozen varieties, plus a great menu as well. Lots of great happy hours, too. They have two happy hours, more than 60 beers on tap. If you're heading over to the X, heading over to St. Paul at all, 242 West 7th Street in St. Paul, plenty of free parking for your visit to Burger Mo's. BurgerMo's.com, BurgerMo's.com, BurgerMo's, the eatlocalminnesota.com restaurant of the week. I got to do one more kind of negative story, and then I'm going to get away from the stories here for the rest of the show. But I did want to make sure I mention this because this is actually getting a little real scary. A recent cluster of drug overdoses across the Twin Cities metro has some authorities scrambling to find the source of any potent drug and to prevent others from suffering the same fate. Minneapolis police said Thursday they've responded to 65 overdoses in the past 9 days. The state's Bureau of Criminal Apprehension notes the past weeks there have been 163 drug overdoses, 14 of them fatal, among the 87 Minnesota police agencies who take part in the overdose detection mapping application program. That's in 2 weeks, 163, 14 deaths. Law enforcement agencies across the metro are stepping up coordination efforts and throwing more resources at the problem. Minneapolis police have created an overdose coordinator position with the department's homicide unit to review all cases and increasing patrols in high overdose areas. In South St. Paul, search warrants at one overdose site tell how investigators are searching for the supplier. And in St. Paul, police, like many other agencies, are focusing on letting people know about the threat of a bad batch of a potential heroin. Time is of the essence. This is not a war on drugs. This is a fight for our families. Police suspect laced drugs have contributed in the spike of recent overdoses. When heroin or prescription drugs are laced with a substance like fentanyl, for example, the risk of overdose and death is much higher, according to the National Institute of Drug Abuse. After the roundtable discussion, Carol told reporters that overdoses brought on by these drugs are often accidental. What we are seeing in some of these situations are people taking a drug they think might be a cocaine or might be a Xanax pill, and they might not even realize the deadly fentanyl drug is in there. He had many of the drugs that kill Americans come from outside the U.S. Washington County has had a rash of deadly overdoses. One person died in an overdose Wednesday in Cottage Grove, which also had four non-fatal overdoses in the past 2 weeks. Another person died of an overdose Tuesday in neighboring St. Paul Park, which came after a May 29th overdose death. In Lakeland and one in Lake Elmo on May 23rd, Sarah Halverson, commander of the Washington County Sheriff's Office, called the spike alarming on Thursday and said the county's drug task force is working with local agencies to find the source. Cottage Grove Police Captain Randy McAllister is not sure the overdoses in the community are related to those nearby, but he said he wouldn't be surprised if they were. In Minneapolis, the city recorded 50 overdoses in the last week alone, an all-time high. One of them was deadly. The overdoses were caused by different types of drugs, such as counterfeit OxyContin, potent heroin, and other unknown substances. Law enforcement agencies have sent out spike alerts in the past few days, but the public let them know about the overdoses. Investigators in Dakota County have issued search warrants over the 6 overdoses this past weekend at the South St. Paul home. After 6 men overdosed, authorities confiscated 2 cell phones during a search of the home at 220 Bercher Avenue in that city. And earlier this week, the Dakota County Drug Task Force obtained another search warrant to examine the phones in an attempt to locate the source of a substance, which some believe was laced with the fentanyl. So, you know, it's I'm going to be honest. I don't know if anyone who's abusing drugs like this is even listening right now. But you need to be careful because these numbers are not a joke. There is clearly someone has shipped in poison into the metro area. And I don't necessarily want to get into all of it's poison. Of course it is. All, you know, the drugs being abused, it's poison. That's undeniable. But someone under the guise of trying to make a buck has basically brought in poison, actual poison, and is selling it on the streets to basically try to make money off of people dying. And first of all, if anyone knows who these clowns are, by all means, turn them in. Turn them in. Get them off the streets. But at the same time, it is terrifying to think that there are people on this planet who's like, I don't care. Bunch of people in Minnesota die. I don't care. I don't care. And they basically sell this drug. I mean, those are some serious numbers. And the thing which is kind of interesting is I kind of get, you know, hits in regards to certain words that pop up in news stories and overdose, overdose, overdose. In the last few days, I've just seen that word come up a lot, and it seems like that this is definitely something very tangible going on right now in Minnesota. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I got this story I've held on for a few days, and I wanted to mention this. Married couples Megan McManus and Aaron Albee like to wind down after a long day curling up on the sofa with their pets to a cocktail and a Netflix drama. Sometimes when they're watching a particularly suspenseful screen scene, the mood is broken by a loud laugh coming from their basement. That would be their roommate, Tony Cola. Okay, tell the truth. One of the reasons why I just wanted to ring this story up at some point was because I wanted to say, Tony Cola, man. Tony Cola, he's unwinding. He turns to comedies, not those dramas. We call him our basement dweller. He's a great guy, very mellow. Well, it's Tony Cola. Of course he's a great guy. Of course he's mellow. It's Tony Cola. How can you have a name like Tony Cola and not be a great guy and very mellow? We couldn't have found a better person. We really lucked out, said Albie. We have a chance to have someone else help us meet our financial responsibilities, and we are 100% okay with that. Getting married used to mean getting done with roommates, building a nest, but today more couples, and not only young ones, are looking for others to help them pay the mortgage and make the rent. If this isn't a sign of our current country right now, I don't know what it is. Married couples are financially stretched, are looking to creative solutions to manage their expenses, said Cheryl Young, senior economist of the real estate website Trulia. Renters who are married can accelerate their savings for a down payment on a home faster with a roommate. If they're buying, it's a way to defray mortgage costs. So basically people, I mean, once again, this is not, you know, a bunch of guys that just graduate college, finding a place, renting it together. I mean, I had a friend that had that. He was out in San Francisco in Daly City, just south of San Francisco. He and his buddies graduated college with me. They went and bought this house. And within 10 years, that house was worth like 20 times more because they actually had a view of the ocean from this house. But it was Daly City. No one was buying there when they bought the place. And they ended up, you know, one of them wanted to stay, but they're like, no, we're going to sell it. And they all made a mint off of it. But that's just the kind of the way things go sometimes. But this is not like college guys kind of rooming together. This is people who are like myself. I'm 50 years old. I got a wife like there, and we have our house in Hopkins. I got three kids now. I'm not looking – before anyone – I'm mad. You're looking to rent? No. I got three kids. Trust me. I get enough, you know, chuckles of the Netflix going on in my house every day as it is. Don't need to be adding anything else.
The repartee crew was really hoping we could maybe get a room over there at your place.
I'm going to have all three of you living at my place. Dude, man, we've converted one of the downstairs closets into a standing bedroom. Okay, all right. Standing bedroom.
We'd also like a studio in the place, too, so we don't have to come here.
Wouldn't we all? Yeah, maybe this is my future looking at me. I don't know. If my kids had moved out, would I – I mean, I got to admit my location is great. Live right within the 494 loop. It's, you know, for me, it's 10 minutes to downtown Minneapolis. It's about 17, 18 minutes to downtown St. Paul with no traffic. So, you know, you can get pretty much anywhere in the Southwest Metro fairly quickly. Would I consider doing that? I don't know. But, I mean, if this is not a sign of the modern world that we live in, the fact that our wages have not kept up, that people are – not only are you working two jobs each just to afford the house, but now you have to rent out your basement to someone, to Tony Cola, to help make ends meet, to help pay off the mortgage. If that's not just a sign of the times that we are in – and reality is I think this is only going to get worse. I don't want to say worse because, I mean, it sounds like in the case of Tony Cola is a great guy. So they really lucked out. So that's not a bad thing. I can tell you right now, I imagine it. I mean, I guarantee for every Tony Cola, there's a Tony Uncola who's out there who I guarantee you open your house to him and you come home one day and all your stuff is gone. A generic cola, a Shasta cola, a Tony Shasta cola. Sorry to anyone out there who's had Tony Shasta cola steal all your stuff. But, you know, you got to go with Coke Classic and Tony Cola. Tony Classic. That's what you need to go with. But I guarantee you, for people that have rented out their houses and their spaces, that there are cases where, oh, money's missing or something like this. Because that's one of the things. that you have to kind of keep in mind. Once you do this again, it's kind of like where you were, where all your valuables are kind of in your room. You know, and you know, you don't leave your phone out. You don't leave your iPad out. You don't leave jewelry out or anything like that. You have to basically – money is not left out. You have to have all that stuff kind of in your room. And frankly, you probably have to start looking at locks on doors. I don't know if I really would want to do that. Granted, once again, it depends. I mean, if one of you three guys wanted – you know, you guys are nice guys. I mean, okay, which
maybe
one –
maybe not Doug.
Well, Pageant, no. No, Doug would be fine. I was going to go with Eric, but producer Eric. But no, I you know, if one of you guys, because I mean, here's my, this is where this crosses over for me. I had a neighbor who has a friend who moved in with him for like a month and a half, 2 months. His apartment caught on fire. If one of you guys were to come to me and say, "Oh, Matt, we got a problem," we'd find a way to make something happen. I mean, at the very least, I'd try to find some, you know, if it wouldn't work for our place, try to find someone else that might be able to help you out. But say it was moving in my place, would I charge you rent for that? No. I mean, you're going through a trauma, you're going through a crisis, you're going like this. There you go. But would I take the step if, like, after, like, 3 months you hadn't moved out, what would I do? Would I boot you? Or – Would I boot you or would I basically start charging rent? Because I can tell you right, when I came back from the military, my dad said, "You better go find your own way because I'm going to charge you for rent." Oh, okay. I'm off, Dad. Would I do that? I probably would. I mean, it depends on the situation. I mean, if it's all of a sudden it's someone likes their cooked onions every night, I don't know if that would go over.
Yeah, well, you're kind of mooching at that point. If you're going over a month or two, I mean, yeah.
Well, but would you come to an agreement? Would I basically, in the taking an emergency situation, would I transfer that into a more permanent situation? Because I mean, if you think about this, you're doing it for a year at least. You can't jerk around people like that. You can't say, "Oh, you can move in," and 3 months later, no, you have to move out. You're basically making the commitment there, and so. You can kind of do a tentative sort of thing. I mean, I've had friends who have all of a sudden called out of the blue, "Can I come stay there for a few days? I'm in town." Sure. But how long would it be before I'd say, "You know what? No, I'm going to start charging your rent to be here." It would be a few months at least. It would be a few months at least. But I'm going to imagine for a lot of people out there, the question is, would you do it? I would imagine there are companies out there that would help do background checks and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. There's lots of those. Yeah.
Student debt might be driving some of these somewhat unorthodox housing arrangements, especially for younger married people. According to the Federal Reserve, at the end of 2018, Americans owed $1.6 trillion for their college expenses. Jesus. Between the two of them, McManus and Albie carry a pretty good chunk of debt. Albie owns about $50,000 for college loans. But after 3 years of marriage, they've grown weary of shelling out for rent. A $5,000 gift from Albie's family, along with the first-time homeowners program, allowed the couple to purchase a 1,000-square-foot single-family home in Fridley. They paid $140,000 for the 60-year-old house, which has two bedrooms, a bathroom, and a fenced yard. So you're sharing a bathroom.
Wait, this is only a 1,000-foot square home, and they're sharing this with another guy?
With Tony Cola.
Wow, that's not a very big space.
Tony Cola's a great guy, man. I think Tony Cola's making it happen. After years of renting together, living together with a little studio, went a place to call our own. I mean, it does present a heck of a question about renters' rights, about landlord rights, and whether or not, you know, what constitutes a contractual agreement. And most of the time, I believe they're on the renter's side on these things. But maybe this is something that communities need to start figuring out, because considering the conservative Republicans in this country are not about to start imposing policies. For God's sakes, we just talked to Susan Dew. We have construction companies in conservative America, where they're supposed to care about the worker, man. You guys don't care about the blue-collar worker until they have to hire that blue-collar worker. And what do? They try to cut their salary in half through some sort of, "Oopsie, I made a keystroke error. Oops, my bad." They don't want to give these people good wages. So considering the conservative idea is to screw over the working class, the lower class, the middle class, maybe communities need to start talking about this, because – Heck, I mean, I might be remodeling my garage for a four-person pad for, you know, Brett, Hunter, Eric, and Padgett all living in there. If we do that, I'm putting cameras in there and we're streaming it online because that's going to be hilarious.
Well, it's going to be like a Big Brother TV show. You can make some money from that, you know.
Every once in a while, I'll just open up the garage door and just hose you guys down and close it again. There you go. Taking care of you guys. Are you okay with foxes and raccoons? I got tons of foxes and raccoons in the neighborhood.
Are they kind of tame?
No. Okay, it's a fox and a raccoon. No. They're
no deal then.
Well. Although the image I have of Hunter curled up with a raccoon and in a hammock in my backyard, he just snuggled in together like they found their two, you know, lost hearts that they've connected.
They're not pets though, so I don't know.
Well, neither is Hunter, but we keep him around. Nah, nice. 952-946-6205. We end out the school year. I got some advice for parents out there when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Hi, it's Tom Hartman. You know, Continental Diamond is special for a lot of reasons. The owners are Jimmy and Helene Pessis, a husband and wife team who had a dream to open their own store more than 30 years ago. They've built a business that is the gold standard. The readers of Minnesota Bride Magazine have named Continental Diamond the best jeweler for the last 7 years. Why? Amazing, friendly, no-pressure customer service, a selection of fine diamonds and design jewelry unlike anywhere else, and the fresh-baked chocolate chip cookies are pretty great, too. Continental Diamond in St. Louis Park and at Continental Diamond.
Habitation Furnishing and Design is simply the best furniture design studio in the Twin Cities. What is a furniture design studio? It's a place where you'll find professional interior designers who are there to help you select the perfect furniture, a single sofa or an entire home. Our designers love making spaces exceptional. When you're shopping for furniture, it makes sense to talk to a professional. Habitation Furnishing and Design, 4317 Excelsior Boulevard in St. Louis Park.
The entire buying experience with Rudy Luther Toyota is so worthwhile. Every new Toyota comes with Toyota Care, 2 years of free maintenance with every new Toyota purchased. Their super staff is wonderful, always ready to help. And there's the Luther Advantage Card. With every new and used vehicle purchase, you'll get 3 years of 10 cents off per gallon of gas at Holiday Station stores, as well as discounted car washes. The Luther Advantage Card keeps you happy in your Rudy Luther vehicle. Head on over to Rudy Luther Toyota, 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Victor's 1959 Cafe in South Minneapolis is a locally owned and operated restaurant offering traditional Cuban food. Open for breakfast and lunch daily with dinner Tuesday through Saturday. For night shift workers, Victor's even has both a morning and evening happy hour, and Victor's now accepts dinner reservations too. Stop in and try some delicious, authentic Cuban cuisine like ropa vieja and seafood paella. Make your reservation and learn more at victors1959cafe.com. Victor's 1959 Cafe, revolutionary Cuban and cooking.
At Better Futures Minnesota, we transform the lives of men and support Minnesota's environment by working towards zero waste. Our approach reaffirms each man's dignity and supports self-sufficiency. Better Futures Minnesota is a work training model. Through our reuse, retail warehouse, and supervised work crews with specialized in residential and commercial building deconstruction, property maintenance, appliance recycling, and janitorial services, we demonstrate ways to employ hard-to-employ men on a pathway to independence. Hire our work crews at BetterFuturesMinnesota.com.
1,000 square feet. Me, my family, Brett, Hunter, Eric, and Padgett all in one area.
What there'd could be a, go wrong?
There'd be a murderer in that house within a week. And it's not going to be the raccoon. It's not going to be the raccoon. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So I want to congratulate every graduate out there because it's a lot of schools are finishing up today. And if you're graduating, congratulations. All my best in the world out there. There is a moment today, and this is I put a post up on Progressive Citizen X, a blog post there. Parental advice from Matt. Now, I want to be careful here how because there are a lot of great ways to raise a kid. There are a lot of great ways to raise a kid. What worked for me might not work for everyone else. I want to make sure that very clear on that. But there are some things that what happened today was. All of a sudden I realized, oh, this is the last day I'm taking a kid to elementary school. from here on out, my kids are all going to be old enough to be in junior high or in high school. And I was realizing, wow, there's something that I did that I thought was really good. And so here are just some things. If you don't do these things, will you raise a good kid? Yeah, probably. But here are just some things I thought about that as I look at my kids today and where they're at, I'm glad that these are the decisions we were able to make. First of all, number one, hands down, back when you have a kid, when they're an infant, they're a toddler, read to your kids when they are young. Every night. One of the reasons why my kids are in good school because my wife started reading to them every night when they were young. Every single night. If she wasn't around, I'd read to them. But my wife, she basically picked up the bulk of the burden on that one. There are a lot of great reasons why reading to your kid at a young age is a good thing. But I will say this, encouraging them to read on their own paid us back. 17 years later, we've got all our kids are very good in school. And I actually think a large portion of that is because they were being read to at a young age and they kind of the idea of learning and exploring was kind of put in their mind. So if you've got a young kid, read to your kid every night if you can. I can't recommend that enough. The second thing is that I have been able to create a situation where for basically 12 years, I've either gotten my kids on a school bus, gotten my kids off a school bus each day, or both. And I can't tell you how, you know, and I understand I've got a luxury here. I've got a really unique career that gives me this malleability to my schedule. I understand that. But the ability for my kids to know that my parents are there, and in this coaster, and if you're out there working, as long as your kids know that you're there, that you're a presence, it's calming and reassuring for your kids, no matter where you're at and how much you know time you have, because a lot of people do have to work a lot of hours. If you can do that, I mean, that helps out quite a bit. And then the other thing is make sure your kids get downtime, because especially as they get into junior high and high school, these kids' schedules are nutsoid. They are absolutely crazy. And I can't tell you how many times I've looked at my kid and I'm like, that kid's under more stress than most people I know in the business world. And so make sure your kids get downtime. Make sure your kids get a good night's rest. Don't, you know, if you're wondering why your kid's, you know, lethargic in the morning, ask what time they're going to bed. If they're going to bed at 1 o'clock in the morning and they have to get up at, you know, 7 the next morning, that's probably a bit of a problem there. So make sure your kids are getting a good night's rest. But when they get some downtime, let them have some downtime. And on behalf of all kids out there, if I may encourage all parents, let them have some downtime for the next few days. They just went through a school year. It's been tough. Let them bounce back. Pageant is up next. You have a wonderful weekend. We are back on a Monday. Until then, see ya.